This is the Vajrayogin Ursul Tenzin seminar entitled Bodhacharya Vatara, held at Naropa Institute in Boulder, Colorado. This is talk number 8, July 7th, 1980. This is an ARP digital remaster made January 2008.
The following will be a talk by the Vajrayogin Ursul Tenzin. This is the 8th talk of the Bodhacharya Vatara, July 7th, 1980 at Naropa Institute.
Evening. Tonight we are going to discuss the 6th paramita called prajna. Prajna means ultimate knowledge. Or you could say knowledge which goes beyond facts and figures. This particular paramita has two aspects. That of practice and that of realization. We could say that up to this point in the Bodhisattva's journey, our practice and realization are still separate. But when prajna dawns, then we could say that practice and realization come together. Prajna has two categories. First is accumulating knowledge through conventional means. That is to say, if you're a good computer programmer, you have learned, you have the knowledge of computer programming. You learned that very well. You have that accumulated knowledge. If you're an artist, painter, for example, you know how to actually mix colors very precisely and very well. If you want to make a particular kind of purple, you can do it. You have that kind of knowledge. If you're a musician, and there's a score in front of you, you're going to play it. You can understand the subtlety of the composer by what's written down. That's sort of ordinary prajna. And that particular kind of prajna is extremely valuable. Why so? Because one's mind has become sharp and clear so that one can understand what's presented. Yourselves as students in this particular course, if your minds are trained, training we're talking about is the accumulation of goodness that results from generosity. If your minds are trained in that way, then it is very easy for you to understand what's being taught. Very easy. You can understand the concepts, you can understand the progression, you can understand the result. That's ordinary prajna. Then there's the extraordinary prajna, or higher prajna. That is to say, by having such a sharp mind, such a clear perception, then one can penetrate to the essence, to the reality of what's being said, or what's being done, or what's being perceived. Essence. Essence is an interesting word. Essence does not mean, in this case, one sees the seed in the ground, you know, like Superman, X-ray vision type thing. In this case, when we talk about essence, or seeing the reality of what's being said, or what's being experienced, what's being felt, what we're talking about is that the duality between the perceiver, the perception, and what is perceived is dissolved, so that there is a complete experience. Complete experience. Complete experience leaves no doubt or no hesitation as to what to do next. In talking about the Bodhisattva path, we're talking about how individuals like ourselves can realize the mind of all the Buddhas. What is the essence of the mind of all the Buddhas? That is pure compassion, without a sense of subject and object. When the duality breaks down or dissolves into pure experience, then there is the simultaneous arising of compassion. And that compassion does not necessarily have an object. Prajna, Sherab in Tibetan, is a transcendent knowledge that is the possibility of knowing has come to fruition. Up to this point, there's the possibility of knowing and the inkling of knowing, and there's also the shadow of knowing. When we talk about prajna, we're talking about the absence of the shadow. In other words, the absence of self-consciousness altogether about what one says, what one thinks, what one does. There's absence of self-consciousness altogether, because there is the simultaneous experience of the subject and object. Absence of duality between this and that. When there is absence of duality between this and that, there is simply things as they are. That's called reality. We are very used to, in our minds, thinking about what reality we're talking about. What reality did you actually mean when you said reality? Did you talk about my reality, your reality, the reality of wood, or the reality of iron, or the reality of fire or water, the reality of my thoughts and my emotions? Which reality are we talking about right now? In terms of prajna, we are talking about the reality of reality. When one's mind has become stable through meditation, that is to say, when the operation of the sense organs does not obstruct awareness, and when awareness is not obstructed by memory, then we give birth to prajna. That is to say, the spontaneous arising of things as they are. In that spontaneous arising, there is neither a question nor a questioner, let alone an answer. In other words, there is no doubt that what is, is. You could say at this point, well then, what is there? Strictly speaking, there isn't anything. Strictly speaking. Loosely speaking, there's nothing. Strictly speaking, if there isn't anything, that means that what we see, smell, taste, hear, touch, or think has no meaning. That means to say, has no particular reference. When we say there is nothing, that means to say, what we see might be blue, red, yellow, green, orange, or whatnot. What we hear might be loud, soft, soothing, not soothing, unpleasant, whatever. What we taste might be bitter, sweet, pungent, whatever. What we touch might be soft, hard, thorny, whatever, etc. But that touching and smelling and tasting and all the rest of it is nothing in itself. So we have two aspects involved with the prajna. We have what's called absolute truth and relative truth. Not anything and nothing. From my point of view, absolute truth is not anything, and relative truth is nothing. Now, this might confuse some people, but let's look at it this way. When you see something and nothing's there, that's a relative truth. But when you look and you don't see anything, that's absolute truth. Basically, everything boils down to whether or not there is any such thing as a self. If there is any such thing as you, me, then we should be able to identify such a thing. We should be able to identify it. I would like to ask anybody here if they remember the moment they were born. Usually we have our birth certificate. It says that Joe Lokes was born on July 17th in St. Luke's Hospital in Manhattan at 8:30 a.m. Everybody has a birth certificate, and we understand that we think that's when we were born, so therefore we exist. But nobody remembers the moment they were born. So basically all of us here are going on hearsay. Well, perhaps we don't have to remember when we were born. We can say that because we have memories of how we have grown up, therefore we were born. It's feeble, but we might get by with that. We could say that, well, I remember kindergarten. We had these blocks and pegs, and there were square ones and round ones, and I had to put one in the other and the one in the other. And I couldn't do it right away, so my hands went like this. And finally, I got the round one in the round hole and the square one in the square hole. Therefore, I know I was born. Well, maybe we don't remember that. So remember later on. We were bar mitzvahed and baptized. Somebody did something and said, you exist. Or we had to first kiss somebody. We remember that. All the memories we have to trace back our existence, to understand that we actually came into being as so-and-so, one point or another, don't seem to actually hold any sense of validity. Because even if you look at the progression of your memories, you don't remember yourself as the same person each time. You remember the significant event in your life. First kiss or prom or whatever, or when you got your PhD or whatever you got. You remember a different thing each time. So you might say that at that point, that because you have memory, therefore, there's something about this that exists, but you still can't remember the beginning of it. In any case, no matter how you try, you can't find any origin to who you are. If you try and look at your sense perceptions to claim your sense of importance, meanness. Because I'm listening to you now, therefore, I exist. If I didn't exist, I wouldn't hear you. I wonder if you can remember what I just said and how far back since I started talking. If you try to use memory as a proof of your existence, it won't work. Because you don't remember everything I said. If memory were proof of existence, that you exist as so-and-so, Joe Dokes, Jane Doakes, then in that case you should remember everything. Well, perhaps it's your body. That's the point. You can remember through your body, or you exist because your body feels heat, cold, pleasure, pain, all the rest of it. But does that actually work? Sometimes you feel the heat in the winter and the cold in the summer. Sometimes you're cold in the middle of the summer. Everybody else feels hot and you feel cold. And you say, can I have a sweater? Do you have a sweater here? Or you put on your jacket because you feel cold suddenly. Everybody else is hot. Sometimes it's the opposite. So even through your body, you can't tell if there's anything existent, anything that goes on. Memory, body. What else do we have? What else do we have to make us convinced that there is such a thing as a self, which has a name and a history and a future, let alone a present? Well, you could say, I know I exist because I hear you right now. If you never heard me before, did you exist before or did I? If you never hear me again, will you exist or will I? Or you could say, well, I'll hear somebody else, therefore I exist. That's very fishy. All in all, we are trying to understand in the present moment what is real. In the present moment, what is actually real. Second type of prajna is the prajna which actually sees. The non-existence of self and other. That's called higher prajna. When non-existence of self and other is actually seen, then we have what's called experience of shunyata, absence of any conceptualization whatsoever. The experience of reality as reality. What does that mean? That simply means that there is absolutely no excuse. And no representation, no analysis, no explanation, and no reference. There is what there is without any reference point. That's a higher type of prajna. How does this prajna come about? It comes about through generosity to begin with. Through discipline, through patience, through exertion, through meditation. At the same time, it is said that prajna, that the previous paramitas without prajna is like blind leading the blind. We could say that there's an element of prajna, what we call discriminating awareness, which comes from wisdom. Discriminating awareness, which gives birth to wisdom. Discriminating awareness is what's called the prajna. Wisdom is what's called shunyata. That there's an element of a prajna from the first moment we discovered our tenderness, our tender heart. There was an actual moment of prajna right there. That is discriminating awareness. In other words, at the very first moment we discovered our tender heart, we discovered that we need not be aggressive and monstrous. We actually understood in a flash, in a moment. However, because of habitual patterns, because we have been for so long chained to acting in a malevolent way, we have to expose ourselves to Buddha Dharma, in this case, the Bodhisattva's path. That is, we must actually practice generosity and discipline and patience and exertion and meditation. And as we do so, the thread throughout is what's called the prajna. The first flash that you had comes to fruition in the sixth paramita. When that comes to fruition, what has been a question becomes an answer. That is to say that having dedicated oneself to the Bodhisattva vow and having practiced meditation and generosity, that one's intention becomes a reality. One's intention becomes reality. You know, all along we have this intention. At the same time, we have doubt whether or not we can fulfill it. When, with the experience of prajna, we realize that fulfilling and intention are the same. And therefore, there is a spontaneous realization that what we call this somebody never existed, and what we call other never existed. And therefore, from beginningless time, there has never been a problem. Absolutely never. And there's never been a question. There is simply this. Even this is misleading from the point of view of prajna. What is prajna? If you take a hair and try to split it in two with a needle and you miss, that is ambition. If you take a hair and lay it on a needle and it splits in two, that's prajna. Prajna is not the result of manipulation, concentration, or dedication. Prajna is the spontaneous seeing traditionally it's said that it's the object subject of no object, object of no subject. It's transcendental knowledge without knowledge of anything. That's why it's called transcendent knowledge. That's why it's paramita. What happens when you have this prajna? What happens is simply this, that you realize from beginningless time you have been trapped in the web of samsara, and you realize that from beginless time, there was absolutely no reason to be so. You realize in a moment that all things, manifestation of mind and mind itself, are non-existent. And therefore, since they are non-existent, they have no beginning, no middle, and no end. Therefore, you realize that what's called the womb of the Tathagata, the Tathagata Garbha, the mother of all the Buddhas, the very essence of how we can actually achieve liberation is prajna. And prajna is, in essence, the liberation itself. To be able to see all things as non-existent and at the same time see non-existence itself as not having any permanent basis is liberation. So if you see things as non-existent and at the same time non-existence has no reference point, then you're liberated. Prajna is not particularly a mystical thing. It's the way we actually perceive our world all the time. Maybe we could have a discussion.
Can you say a word or two about how devotion to our teacher stimulates or arouses that kind of prajna, brings that kind of prajna into birth?
The other way around. It's only when you see things clearly that devotion arises. Devotion, real devotion, does not arise unless there is prajna. Otherwise it becomes idiot stuff. You see what I mean? What they call devotion is going on at the movie here in the Boulder Theater. Your heart opens up tonight at 9 p.m.
So there's no way to say what brings prajna into birth?
Well, yes, there is. What brings prajna into being is prajna. That is to say that the very inquisitive mind that you had to ask the question, in its fullest sense, can perceive reality as it is. That which sees things as they are is prajna. If you look to see what prajna is, you won't find anything. There's no such thing. But then again, if you look to see what's real, you won't find any particular thing. Prajna is what's called the mother of the Buddhas. In other words, that which gave birth to enlightenment. Enlightenment, as its basis, is the experience of shunyata. That is, this and that have no particular bias. And this and that are actually one in experience. So, you can't say, but you can say.
Thank you.
If you say it properly, you can say it.
If there is nothing, if there is no I, and if there is no you, then there is no compassion.
From that point of view, yes. But if there isn't anything, then there's compassion. You see, when there's nothing, then there's no compassion. When there isn't anything, then there's nothing but compassion. Why? Let's get into it. When there isn't anything, there's nobody hurt, nobody dying, nobody dead, nobody living. So there's just sort of radiation of awareness. That comes from your Vipassana practice. Huh? When there's nothing that combines with that, then that there's living beings who die, suffer, go through torture, all the rest of it. That nothing and not anything actually combine together to produce a great compassion.
Then this seems to be a word game.
Between whom and whom? Who and whom? Between me and you, or between you and me and everybody else?
Between us all.
So basically all we're doing is playing a word game, and that's why we live, to play a word game. You believe that?
No, I don't.
What do you believe?
I believe that there's something.
What? That's a very crucial point, you see. If you don't think that this is a word game and we're not fooling around, then what is there?
There is you and there is I and there is everybody in this room.
How many is that?
No number.
There's an endless number in this room. So what? That's a number game.
So we have compassion.
Why? Why
exist.
Should we? Because there are numbers?
No,
because there's you and me?
If we all exist, we have compassion. If none of us exist, then...
We have no compassion. That's what I mean. What happens when we realize we don't exist?
Then there's nothing.
There's nothing? No compassion.
Not according to what you said.
According to what I said?
If nothing exists, then compassion also does not exist.
No, I said when nothing, there's two types of experience we have, right? There's not anything and there's nothing. Compassion is part of nothing. Not anything is free from the idea of compassion or aggression, and all the rest of it. In order to be compassionate, you have to experience not anything. Otherwise, you can never be compassionate. You'd just be lying. You see? You'd just be thinking that there are others and I must help them. There aren't any others here.
You mean the only compassionate human beings have been the ones that have meditated?
That's right. The ones who have realized that there isn't anything. That's the only compassionate human beings I've ever met. That's right. Have you met any?
I've met a lot of compassionate people that don't meditate.
How often are they compassionate? All the time or just some of the time?
Sometimes more compassionate than the people I've met that have meditated.
Oh, yeah. I don't care about that kind of noise. You know, that's noise. That's usual noise of this usual crowd. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the compassion is absolute, 100%, 24 hours. There's no break in compassion when someone has realized that there is not anything. We met a lot of compassionate people. They're compassionate when things go right for them. When they're not, they get really pissed off. Have you met anybody that's always compassionate?
We're suddenly talking about a person that's always compassionate?
Have you met anybody that is always compassionate?
I've never been with anybody always, so I don't know if they are always compassionate or not.
Yeah, I agree with you. Does that mean that there's a something somewhere? If they're not compassionate always, to me, that means that they must believe somewhere that they exist. That's according to what I've been taught, anyway. Someone who's realized prajna doesn't think about themselves. So, it's not a matter of whether somebody's meditated or not. We're not talking about if somebody's meditated, then if they meditate, then they should be saint so-and-so, you know. We're talking about path. You walk on it. You practice it. And you realize it. You don't bullshit anybody.
Getting back to this prajna idea, I read a couple translations of the Alankavatara Sutra and Sarangama Sutra, and like you said, the emphasis, or one emphasis on, is on the discriminative awareness. And I was just wondering, since this is so dependent upon a subject-object relationship, exactly what is the mechanism, or this is kind of a trick question, but what's the mechanism by which you can have this discriminative awareness without a subject-object relationship?
There is no mechanism. The prajna is itself. Subject-object relationship is the absence of prajna.
But the discrimination, isn't that dependent on a...
No. That is the absence of subject-object relationship.
Okay.
Do you understand what I said?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, don't say okay so quickly.
Well, all right. All right, we have discrimination. You said discriminative awareness.
Discriminating awareness.
Of what? Things?
Wisdom. No thing. No object, no subject. We have discriminating awareness, which is wisdom. Let me ask you. When you see something, do you know what that is that you see? First off, immediate. If there's a sudden little sound, you turn, you look, there's no preconception, just look. Do you know what it is that you see? Before you say, rug, do you know what that is that you see?
Not ultimately, I just, based on experience and memory, I know what it is.
Before that, is there anything? When you first look, see, is there anything? Or,
I don't know.
I should say, can you distinguish between those moments? Can you distinguish between seeing, then looking, then conceptualizing? Can you distinguish those moments, how fast they go?
No.
Look at me. What do you see?
It's a trick question.
Show and tell. It's not a trick question. It's reality.
I see many things. I see a person up there. I see I don't know what you mean.
You see behind, you see in front, right? See color?
Yes.
What color do you see?
Of you?
Yeah.
I see a light suit, a...
What color suit?
Beige. Cream. I don't know. I see a lot. All depends what you want to call it, I guess. I don't.
Yeah, it certainly depends on that, doesn't it? How about the tie? What color?
I don't know. Lighting makes it look sort of the same color as your suit.
Lighting makes it look that way. Oh. So our vision is dependent on this lighting there. What color pants do you wear? Don't look.
Without looking and even looking, they're sort of a shade of blue.
Sort of. Hmm. Well, perception is in question altogether.
Well, what is discrimination then?
Discriminating awareness, what we call prajna, is that which sees without reference to seer or seen.
Then
therefore,
what is discriminated?
Absolutely no doubt. Absolutely no doubt. What you see is exactly what there is. Same thing. At the same time, same thing. Seeing and what is are the same. There's no doubt, you see. There's no hesitation, none whatsoever. How does that happen? If you practice meditation, one's mind becomes steady. Therefore, you don't exactly give in to smell, taste, and all the rest of it. You just hold it there. Then you can actually expand. Prajna is not a thing.
Well, I don't know, I guess my question was mainly is, what is this? I don't know, I see this translation, this discriminating awareness. Now, what is discriminated?
Discriminating between what's real and what isn't. In other words, between one's neurotic fantasy and the reality. One's neurotic fantasy is the buildup of continual fear and ignorance. Ignorance and fear. Fear, ignorance and fear, which is built up over eons to make what you call you. Every one of us at this very moment is the buildup of ignorance and fear. Prajna cuts right through the middle of that, just like a sharp knife through liver. There's no harm, but there's complete cutting and complete awakening that what you see is actually what you see. And you don't have to go ask the expert because you actually see it. It's real, you see. What we're talking about is real. You see what you see. If somebody asks you, what do you see? You can tell them what you see. Usually what happens if somebody says, what do you see? You start to think whether it's right or wrong before you even say. That's because you don't see it. If somebody says to you, is this reality? You go like this. Eyes go like this. Because we're afraid immediately that somebody's going to ask us if we know who we are, what we are. Afraid in the moment. Prajna cuts through that fear because that fear is the very notion that such a thing as me exists altogether. Cuts right through it like a knife through a liver.
Thank you.
Gray. It's pearl gray.
Are you sure?
Yes, quite sure. And I understand why you see it that way, because of these lights. That's true. The lights do make a difference on the color. Oh. Harold.
Thank you. If I don't exist, then what's reincarnated?
Not you.
Then what me?
That's your question or mine?
That's my question.
Well, If you asked it, you should have the answer. If you say, what me, then who's asking it? The me or the what?
I'm lost.
Well, then relax. If that's the case, why fight?
But I still come back that if there is no me, if there is no...
Who is asking that?
I guess whoever proposes reincarnation, whatever, you know, it presupposes an existence.
There's no reincarnation. The notion is that as long as there is memory, there is a repercussion, cause and effect. This body is a result of having had a thought. So as long as you have a thought and you believe in it, there's going to be another one like this. And goes through the whole thing, has to shit and piss and all the rest of it.
No, but the Karmapa is an enlightened being, and yet he's been reincarnated since whenever, since Avalokiteshvara.
Are you telling me?
I'm just repeating, parroting.
What you read? What you know?
What I was told.
Well, what do you know?
I don't know anything about reincarnation.
Neither do I.
No, but you know something about not being there.
Not being where?
Non-existence. The non-existence of...
I know about three things. Existence, non-existence, and absence of both. From my experience.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Red shirt.
Would you agree that you sometimes speak in paradoxes?
Who?
You.
Me? I would not agree to that.
I was wondering if I should try to understand what you're saying, or...
Who is wondering that? You?
Pardon?
You were wondering that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I should try to understand what you're saying, logically, and then give up. Or whether I shouldn't try from the start, but I should, you know, not try at all.
That's our question, isn't it? That's everybody's question. Should we try from the start, or maybe we should give up from the start?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what.
Well, what's the problem with that? Is there any doubt
about what to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to.
Well, what happens if you try from the start?
It lasts for a while, and then I sort of give up.
What happens if you don't try from the start?
I have troubles with that. I usually do try.
Sometimes you don't. What happens when you don't? What happens when you don't?
I can't remember.
What happens when you do?
I get angry.
And then after that? Do you remember what you get angry at?
Well, at myself. Or at you or whoever is speaking in paradox.
Okay, yourself or at me. All right, if you get angry at yourself, How'd that begin? Where did that begin? That
anger? The anger at myself?
Yeah. When you heard me or when you listened to me?
I guess when I tried to figure you out, or what you said, rather.
That's when the anger starts. That's when ego starts?
Yeah, I guess one could say that.
When you try to figure out?
Yeah.
So basically you shouldn't try to figure out anything. If you don't try to figure out anything, then you have no anger and no ego.
But,
right?
But then why do I come here?
Oh, you should try and figure out. Should you try and figure out?
Well, it seems I need to try to figure out in order to
figure out. Are you asking me why you come here or yourself? Which one?
Both.
Both. Sort of. Well, I would say you come here to listen to Buddha Dharma so that you can actually understand how to practice and attain enlightenment.
Yes.
Yeah. And now I ask you, why did you come here?
To try to figure that out.
How do you figure that out?
By trying to understand what you say.
How do you try to understand what I say?
By listening.
One. Two.
Churn it over in my mind.
Contemplating.
Contemplating.
Three.
Doing it.
Meditating.
Right.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentleman there in the white shirt? Quite right.
Your closing words were, prajna is the way we see our world all the time. And you had also said, and I believe referring to the enlightened state, that one's intention becomes a reality.
That's right.
The first statement implies that there's kind of an ongoing wakefulness and seeing, that we're always in an enlightened state,
mm-hmm.
if I understand it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
The second one implies that that enlightened state is, you said, becomes a reality. I wondered if you really meant creating. It seems there's a play going on between the prajna.
I didn't say your enlightened state becomes your reality. I said your intention.
Your intention becomes your reality. Intention from what? From where?
Intention from an ignorant slob to enlightened being.
From ignorant, say that again, please.
Slob.
Right. So there's a dialogue going on then between the ignorant slob and the enlightened being.
Well, I think it's between your shadow and your actual body. You know, like you always look back.
Well, I like the ignorant slob and enlightened being. That makes more sense to me.
Well,
I don't quite understand the shadow.
Well, all right. Ignorant slob is like, until you learn how to eat, you might put it. Eventually you figure out it goes here. Eventually you figure out you don't have to put too much, but you can put a little bit at a time. And it actually works the same way.
Okay, so this intention, whether it's coming from enlightened being or ignorant slob, is constantly creating one's reality? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And this ultimate reality, the things that are the way they are, that's from the enlightened.
That is the intention.
That is the intention.
There's no difference. You see, the intention is the enlightened state of mind. But it takes a tremendous sense of refining. Because if we say that there is simply intention, and that intention is enlightenment, then why are we going through this question and answer period, and why did you come here, and why is the whole thing happening? Because we still feel a question. As long as we feel a question, there is path. As long as we feel path, there is regeneration of inspiration. When there is no more path, no more inspiration, then either you are a complete maniac, or you have understood. And that's quite true.
Thank you.
When there is path, when there is intention, there is path. When there is path, there is realization. Intention and realization are the same. If you follow the right path, you have either realization or what's called rudrahood. In other words, if you misunderstood your intention, then you're a complete maniac. Otherwise, you're what's called a bodhisattva. In other words, if you think that you did this for yourself, then you become maniac.
Sir, could you say something about compassion, shunyata, and prajna, the relationship?
Prajna, shunyata, and compassion are like the whole notion of how the bodhisattva acts in the world. When you see something, that's a prajna. When you see what it is, that's shunyata. Because you see the shunya quality, therefore you have compassion. Let's translate that into ordinary terms. Is usually what happens when we look at something, we look at it from the point of view of either like or dislike. From the point of view of prajna, there is no like or dislike, there's just pure seeing. If you have pure seeing, then you have the result of pure seeing. Usually when you have like or dislike, the result is either favorable or unfavorable. When you have pure seeing, the result is shunya, that is to say, reality. If you see a flower, it is exactly what it is. It doesn't mean anything to you or anybody else. It's exactly what it is. Therefore, it is supremely what it is, perfectly what it is. Therefore, because it is perfectly what it is, there is what's called radiation. That is to say, that one's perception and the flower become one. That's called compassion. Compassion doesn't mean that you go around saying, can I help you, can I help you, can I help you? Compassion means that when perceiver and perceived become one, then there is absolutely no enemy. You couldn't do a bad thing. You couldn't hurt anybody ever. Finished. The whole thing is finished. Complete. That's compassion. It's a complete result of the union of perception and perceived, and whatever you call it, perceiver and perceived.
No beginning and no end of the future.
Well, that's every moment. You know, people try to prove that they exist by saying, this happened before and this is going to happen later. And people even try to prove that the present moment exists.
Present future.
Whatever. Present past, present future, present present. As soon as you say, look, this is real right now, and your voice ends, and the thought ends, somebody listens to it, then it's over. But did it just happen? Are you listening to it in the present?
It's rather dubious.
It's rather dubious, but it's rather real at the same time. The point is, you can't say. You can't say whether what I'm saying right now is the present moment, or it's a result of the past, or it's actually going to be over right now.
Sir, in these discussions and presentations such as you've given tonight, I'm becoming aware of a very distinct activity in my mind, and I'm curious about what you'd say. It's I wish I could get a clear metaphor for it. It's something like a gate that drops and opens.
Yes.
There seems to be an understanding, and then without any real understanding why there isn't. And it's become very distinctive in terms of listening to particularly this material.
That's right. but make it solid.
Make that experience solid?
That's what I said. You're right. That's quite correct. But when you look at that, what you just said, you try to possess it. Don't possess it, let it go, then it becomes a prajna. Same thing. Gate drops, look and see. In other words, you can't say what it is, but you actually experience it. And when you experience it and try to say what it is, then it becomes like a tongue twister. Then you wonder if it ever existed or not. It is actually true that you look at me and I look at you. We don't have to actually question whether there is a me or a you in this particular looking or seeing. Stay with that.
Sir, I'm sort of interested in the technique part of the paramitas leading to prajna.
Yeah.
And it seems like the paramitas are the path of a bodhisattva. And they start off with the generosity. I can't quite figure out why it starts off with that linear order of generosity, discipline, patience.
First thing one realizes is that when you can let go in your meditation practice, then you can actually sit by yourself. And nobody, you don't even have to think to yourself why you're sitting there.
Well, this meditation that...
You don't have to even think why you're sitting there. That's generosity.
Right.
Yeah, you're just sitting there. A great generosity. You're just sitting there. You don't have to think. You don't say, well, I'm sitting here because I'm going to attain enlightenment, because I'm going to go through the paramitas, I'm going to renounce. Just sitting there.
Well, is there some linear order to these paramitas?
Yeah, that's the first one.
They actually start off with generosity?
You just start off with complete generosity. You suddenly realize on the spot that you are sitting here.
Now, the discipline of staying here.
That's next.
And the patience.
That's next. Yeah. Well, if you're sitting there, right? We're sitting here. And you suddenly realize that there's kind of flesh that goes on that you don't actually have to prove anything to anybody.
Right.
Usually we're thinking all the way around, like, who sees me? What did I say? What am I doing? What am I, you know, how do I look? Everything. How do I smell? Everything. Suddenly you realize that you're here. Just here. Then you start to think, how do I smell? How do I... And they say, wait a minute. I'm still here. The discipline. Come back. Come back. Keep coming back. And when you keep coming back, then you start to smell how you smell, look how you look. And then you begin to think, wait a minute, I shouldn't look like this because I'm actually insulting the person next to me. I smell like this, I'm insulting the person on the other side. So that's discipline. Once you realize that you can be here as you are, then you start to realize how you smell and how you look and all the rest of it. So you sort of clean up because you think it's more generous for other people to be that way. And then after that, even if they don't like how you smell and look, then you have patience because you actually have worked really hard at it. See? And you probably know that it smells okay, even though it might be one... You see, you might put on a cologne that the person next to you doesn't like at all. You know, they might be completely opposed to whatever it is, Aquavelva or whatever the thing is, you know. They don't like it, you know. But that doesn't mean at that point that you have to beat yourself over the head or beat them. Then you have patience. You say, well, they don't like it, so I'll just sit here with it, and next time I won't put on so much. Because they don't like it, or might not even put on any at all. Then, after that, since you're still sitting next to them, and you didn't put on any perfume, and then at that point, they fall asleep. and lean on you. Not only do you have patience, but you have to sit up to try to hear what you're listening to and having somebody falling asleep on your shoulder at the same time. So you have exertion. That is to say that you can actually handle that energy of staying awake.
Well, correct. That all made some sense.
Good.
I'm somewhat interested in why meditation follows the exertion and leads into the prajna.
Oh, meditation then, yeah. Mm. Well, at that point, it's a question of the totality of your sense perception altogether. Because basically, so-and-so starts to fall asleep on your shoulder and snore. Right? At that point, you begin to fall asleep. You forgot about your dislike of the person and your dislike of their falling asleep, and you start to fall asleep.
That's not meditation particularly, though.
No. Then meditation comes in when you don't. See? Meditation is even so. Even with all the obstacles that arise in one's mind, still you're awake. See, the sleepiness of another person is also your own sleepiness at the same time. I'm just using that analogy of other because we're dealing with this sense of Mahayana here. We're not dealing with just me anymore. We're dealing with our whole environment. And when the environment starts to go to sleep, so do we, usually. We could say, well, Carter is really bad. It says so in the newspaper. And everybody starts to say, Carter's really bad. He hasn't done anything for this country. And we start to look at the cartoons, and he's really bad, isn't he? And then Reagan starts to look better, doesn't he? Reagan looks really good because Carter's really bad.
I don't particularly follow politics.
Anyway, what would you like to say? Because we're getting on with this conversation.
Something again about the meditation and the fruition of that is egolessness.
The fruition of meditation is a steady mind.
It's a steady mind.
Fruition of prajna is egolessness.
I was thinking that prajna was discriminating awareness.
Mm-hmm. What does it discriminate at that prajna? Whether there's any self or not. In this or in that. That's what it discriminates.
Oh, so the meditation leads into the egolessness of discrimination.
I beg your pardon?
Why is meditation the fifth paramita, not the first?
Because one has to steady one's mind in order to see properly. If you don't steady your mind, you can't see properly. You have double vision.
That's why it's the fifth paramita?
That's why it's the fifth. Absolutely.
But underlying all this, the path of a bodhisattva, there seems, in my case, a sense of beginning with meditation, initially, shamatha-vipassana.
There's meditation from the point of view of trying to cure oneself, and there's meditation from the point of view of working with others. That's two different things. Hmm.
Thank you.
Did you raise your hand again? There you are. Here's a microphone. Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to ask more about discriminating awareness. You spoke of it as sort of a sense of cutting through the liver of neurosis, and I was wondering if this implies that the liver of neurosis is necessary. In other words, it's dependent.
No, not necessary at all.
In other words, it's not simply discriminating.
Liver of neurosis doesn't exist. You cut through yourself. Cut through your notion of cutting through your liver.
But there's still some sense of cutting through something involved.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely correct.
Always?
Always. That's what's called pure discriminating awareness. It's always cutting through. It doesn't even matter if there's a something. So your mind's like a razor knife.
So seeing things as they are implies this cutting through. seeing a flower as it is.
That is cutting through.
Implies first.
Not implies, that is cutting through.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Huh? Huh? Jacob? Gentleman in the second row. That's a good point. What's your name? Suzanne? Have you been studying in Europa long?
No.
First year?
Well,
yeah. Okay, wanted to tie couple things together. First of all, regardless of what color your suit is, I really like it. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Secondly,
is that a lead in to the second thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definite connection.
Okay.
Second is, again, connecting prajna with the other paramitas.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more, I think, maybe more ordinary prajna, although it has the sort of same gate-opening mm-hmm. quality. And that is, first, there's a sort of tenderness or whatever of giving up something and saying, I should start doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a sort of further finding an opening to act. And this is really a question about action in the paramitas in particular.
Where are you from?
Where am I from? From what point of view?
Where have you lived?
What country?
Where have you lived most of your life?
Most of my life, Boston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Figures. Eh?
From the beginning, when one feels tenderness, that is also the sense of inquisitiveness. When you have tenderness, then when you're not so concerned about yourself, when you have that tenderness, you actually can look at something, even though it's in flashes, you know, short spurts. If you actually take on the practice of the paramitas, then you can extend that inquisitiveness to a larger perspective, larger, larger, larger. When you actually let go of inquisitiveness itself, then you have what's called prajna. Then you look without looking, see without seeing.
Okay, well, I see sort of two different things. One is the prajna, which is the vision opening up, but there also seems to be a
prajna is the mechanism, it's not the vision.
Okay, mechanism, whatever.
You know, just like your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or your sense perceptions.
But there's also the hands, which is action.
And that's very good, that's very good, yeah. Well, what do you see?
I see myself not being generous. And I want to be generous. What do I do with my hands? What do I do with my life to be generous?
If you have to, put them in your pocket.
But what if... How do I know whether I should put it in pocket or not? And how
because
do I know?
Because if they start to slap somebody, mm-hmm. then they should be in your pocket.
Well, what if...
You're talking about second paramita now.
Mm-hmm.
Discipline. You're not talking about prajna. When you get to the level of prajna, there's no question about what you should do with your hands. When you have generosity, then you have a question of these hands seem to be clumsy, bumping into things. Then, if you have generosity, if you really do, then you realize that you shouldn't really wave them around. Maybe you can just fold them. That's called discipline, conduct. When you have that, this is kind of like joining, bondage of discipline. When you have generosity and your hands together, then possibly you have patience. Because at that point you have body and mind actually at the same time locked together. Generosity is your mind. Discipline is your body. You have the two locked together, you have patience. When you have patience, then this begins to relax. Then you have exertion. Then you really have exertion. When this grip begins to relax, then you have endless opportunity to do a lot of things with your hands. When you actually begin to see your hand in front of you, that's meditation, man. Because you begin to see this and that. There's no difference in moving your hand and who you are. If that's the case, then you can actually see what is. And nobody can say what that is that you see. All we can say is it doesn't have any origin, and it's not the object of your thought.
So at this point, would you recommend keeping one's hands clasped rather than trying to give someone...
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Even before that, I would recommend being kind to yourself before you even work with your hands.
Okay. I still like your suit.
So do I. Got it on sale, by the way. It's a good deal.
Sir, in terms of the three things you talked about that you knew, existence, non-existence, and
the absence of both. Yes.
Does prajna cut through them all simultaneously, or is there a process?
Three, one at a time.
Just like that? First this and that?
No.
And then
first is this, then there's that. Then there's that and not this, or this and not that. Then there's not this and not that. And then there's neither this nor that. And then there's neither both nor neither. Something like that. Anyway, basically, you think, I like you. And then you think, what am I talking about me? What is this I? You know, first you say, I like it. You, or something. You say, I like it. And then you think to yourself, I like it? What's this that likes it? Then you realize there's nothing that you can find to say this that likes that. But there's still that. Then you think, that. That. You try to say, I like that, but it doesn't come out. You just say that. But then you look at that, and you actually can't see what that is. You can't find that anywhere. You know, if you take a look at the rug or your clothes or whatnot, you say, what's this that? Well, it's a suit. What's a suit? Well, it has threads. How many? Well, a lot of them, you know. They're sort of sewn together. Sewn together? How are they sewn together? Well, there's a machine that does it, or there's somebody that does it. How long did it take them to do it? You know, and you go through that. See? You actually go through that. You look at that. Because you believe in it so much. In other words, your pleasure is at stake from this. Or that, rather. Not this. That. This becomes a that. Actually, it becomes a this. It's a further this. It's not an actual that yet. It's just still a further extension of this. Okay, and then you start looking at that. Right?
Yeah. In terms of the actual that.
Yeah, the actual that.
When there's less this, and all of a sudden the world just gets larger.
That's still this. More. That's still this. When you have less this and more that, that's still this. That's not actually that yet.
What's the quality of real
that? It's a quality when you're surprised. When you're surprised, then you think that exists. Usually, you have mental concept of that. But that's still this. Even though you see me, I see you, it's still this. But when that goes away, or this goes away, then you have a real that, then you're terrified.
Which is real this as well?
No, there isn't any this. There's no problem with this. There's that. Then you're terrified. Absolutely terrified. Why? Because you don't know what to make out of that. Beg your pardon? Who is terrified? Perception of that is terrified. The perception of that is terrified.
And who knows that the perception of that is terrified?
Just the perception of that. In other words, when you're afraid of something, like in the dark, right? Or when you see one of those scary movies, you know it's a movie, right? You're sitting in The Shining, and suddenly you go, who's terrified? Is it because of the movie? You know it's a movie. Movie's not going to get you. How are you terrified if you know it's a movie, right? There's a screen and it's projected. You know that? When you came in, you bought a ticket. It's a movie. It goes like this and the things move around. And you're sitting there and the movie is never going to eat you up because it's a movie. But still, what's terrified then? What's terrified of that movie? Can you say? Did you see that movie?
No, I haven't.
Well, I haven't either. But I heard that people are very terrified. But anyway, if you just take that kind of experience, what's terrified?
Because nobody knows.
A traditional analogy is seeing a rope as a snake. You're walking along in the dark and you see this rope and you think it's a snake and you go... as thinking that to be other than it is. So,
but then I'm terrified of this.
You are?
Yeah, because it's me who is taking the rope for a snake.
Yeah, that's this, right, yeah, but that's not that yet. There's much more terror to come. First you have to get over this, then you see what that is. That's much more definite than this. One more. Over here. Coming to the end of that and this. Yes, Francis.
Is that which feels the terror the same that which feels the compassion?
That's right. There's one thing different. Absence of aggression. When there's absence of aggression, there is a pure seeing.
So that working with fear, there might be a way of working with fear that...
Working with fear starts from generosity, goes all the way to prajna. That's what we're working with all the while anyway. Fear. Fear that we don't exist or that we exist.
Uh-huh. Now, this feeling of existence, which I seem to have...
Are you sure it's one or the other? Existence or non-existence? Which one?
Existence.
Uh-huh. How do you know that?
Because I'm more here than I am over there. That's how I know. I mean, I'm more here and I'm more 10 feet out, I'm more, and 20 feet out, it starts to get sketchy.
You mean there's something over there?
Well, whatever it is isn't me.
It's not you. You know what it is?
If I think about it, I get an idea.
Ah. Does that mean that that's there?
My idea of it seems to be there, yes.
So, is your idea of it there?
Here.
There.
Well, no, it starts when you see, it goes out, and then you see, then something is there.
That's right, yeah.
Feeling.
Goes out.
Yeah.
You see it's something.
Yeah.
What?
Whatever it turns out to be.
Exactly. Always. Always. Whatever it turns out to be, that's what you see.
But this feeling...
So what's the fear? It's going to be like that all the time.
But sometimes it comes the other way, see?
You mean that curtain, that thing's yes. going to see you?
Yeah.
Is that going to see you? That thing over there?
Well, sometimes it does comes right at me.
Does it?
Yeah.
How close does it come?
All the way
in. Right into the head.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Into the gut. That.
And that's scary.
Yes. I would imagine so. It's Walt Disney, huh? The curtain comes marching up to Dunsinane, right? Burnham Wood comes marching up to Dunsinane. Zoom, 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 zoom.
Can be almost exactly like that.
Can be if you don't have any discipline. Yeah. And that's why meditation becomes so important. To begin to see one's mind as stable, even though projections are this close or that far away.
And that fear of that could be turned, could
be transformed
to
paramita, to wisdom.
To feeling of compassion, you said.
Compassion comes from the transformation. Seeing that curtain coming up to Dunsinane. And no fear whatsoever of accepting that. Maybe we should go completely, maybe we'll go completely crazy. We should. Because all the curtains are marching up to our foreheads. All the time. All the time. They're all marching up to us. It's a completely claustrophobic world altogether. Every minute of the day, 24 hours, every minute. You wake up and everything's right on you immediately.
Not immediately, this little.
Oh? Huh? Or there's something?
Time before that happens.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we better close our discussion because then we'll get really crazy. Is there a little time before that happens?
Yes.
That's called meditation. If you take that little time, then you can actually develop prajna. The little time before that projection starts coming in on you. That's called meditation, steadying one's mind. If you steady your mind in that way, then what you see is not an illusion.
It's not an illusion.
Not an illusion. Because you took the time to actually see it. That's a curtain. Mm-hmm. It's brown.
So it's the idea that's coming at me, not the...
Not the curtain. If you steady your mind, then you can actually develop prajna. You can say, and guess what? It's a brown curtain. It's right there. It's a very simple world in that case. Very mm-hmm. simple. Straightforward. Well, hope I didn't confuse anybody. Basically, the point is that if you develop your mind properly, through proper practice, you can actually see what is. When you see what is, there's no point in believing in a self or another, because that's basically a war game that depends on who is going to win and who's going to lose. When you have a prajna, you realize nobody's going to win, nobody's going to lose, because nobody ever existed to begin with. If nobody ever exists to begin with, we have a spontaneous harmony, totality. Then we can act like a bodhisattva. Unless you have experience of prajna, you can't act like a bodhisattva because you're usually giving things away because you feel poverty-stricken, or giving things away because you feel too heavy, loaded with things. That's not a bodhisattva. Bodhisattva gives away his... her body, speech, mind, all the rest of it, because there's no heaviness and no poverty. There's pure perception. Therefore, there's inexhaustible supply. You can give away everything because you realize there's nothing in particular Everybody thinks that there's something. Everybody wants something. And they think they can get it from somebody or something or other. A bodhisattva realizes that everybody thinks that way because the bodhisattva has pure prajna. And therefore, bodhisattva develops skillful means, compassion. Actually works with all of us who think those of us who think that we can get something out of nothing. And bodhisattva works with that. Encourages us to realize that something out of nothing is still nothing. We begin at the beginning always. We have a pure, intelligent mind from the very beginning. You can exercise your prajna, that quality of prajna, and see what is by basically being non-aggressive and not holding anything for yourself. We talked about that all the way through. So, applying this to your life is also meaning that you have a very sharp mind and you don't get conned by anything. If things appear to be attractive to you, you should check it out to see whether or not they're attractive to you because they can relieve your sense of generosity, or they can relieve your sense of discipline, or they can relieve your sense of patience, or they can relieve your sense of exertion, or they can relieve your sense of meditation. If they don't relieve any of those, then pretty much you can be sure that you're seeing things correctly.